Hey guys, today's show is brought to you by Harry's. Of course, you've heard me talk about Harry's razors before on the show. I am a Harry's user, have been for a long time. Of course, I love Harry's because it's the easiest, highest quality product that you can get for men's grooming. Super easy to go over to harrys.com, stock up on what you need for your shaving needs, comes right to your door. And it's high quality stuff, high quality razors, cartridges, shave gel, and it's no fuss. So I've been a Harry's user for a long time, and I would encourage you to do the same. Great way to support the show. Go to harrys.com/lineup. And this holiday season, Harry's is offering custom limited edition shaving sets, the perfect gift. Guys, it's the brother-in-law gift. It's the default stocking stuffer for your brother, your brother-in-law, your dad, anybody. It's easy. It's great. It's high quality, and it pleases everybody. You get the cartridges. You get the shave gel. You get the limited edition winter chrome handle. Okay? You can get it engraved if you want to go next level. Okay? They start at $10. It's the perfect gift, and you're going to get $5 off your order if you use harrys.com/lineup, and it's a great way to support the show. So this holiday, give Harry's, give Handsome, get that holiday shopping done, get that holiday shopping done online at your desk while you're at work, and cross it off your list, because honestly, you can't fail with harrys.com/lineup. Now let's get into the show. What is going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome on in to the Lineup Logic Podcast, daily fantasy podcast, bringing you lineup construction ideas for the DFS slate upcoming, FanDuel and DraftKings. We're talking week 14 of the NFL. I'm not going to lie, man. 16 games is a lot of games. 16 games is a lot of games. We got 16 games, full slate here Thursday, all the way through Monday. Interesting move to note for players on FanDuel. We were used to seeing the extra Sunday night game on the main slate. No more. Sunday night is not included on the FanDuel main slate this week. So the Sunday night game between Baltimore and Pittsburgh, as appealing as that would be, mostly just because of Le'Veon Bell, is not on the main slate. So you're going to have to play the primetime slate, just like DK. They moved that over there. Okay, makes sense. Know why you do it. They want to get people their money so that they can invest in other slates, that kind of thing. I don't know. I mean, it's kind of nice to not have to tilt the Sunday night game, but then again, it also changes the, you know, it's nice to actually only have to break down the main slate as a core slate, and then you peripheral plays basically from the other slates. But I think that was it's an interesting decision. So we'll break those games down, but of course they're a little bit different because they're not on the main slate. So we are going to concentrate our plays on Sunday's main slate, but we'll talk about the Thursday night game, which should be a fun one just from a football perspective, and then the Monday and the Sunday night game. Guys, I want to recommend, of course, patreon.com/lineuplogic. We have, $15, $10 tier, $5 tier, just to support the show in any way that you can. If you've been listening throughout football season, you know, it's always appreciated. It's a thank you for the work that's been put in here. Helps us keep the lights on over there at Lineup Logic. And you know, the reality is basketball season is in full swing. Like that we're headed that direction. You know, we got three more weeks of regular season football, but then we are going to head straight towards basketball season with full steam ahead. So let's go ahead and jump into the week 14 game by game breakdown while we still have football. Okay, Thursday night's game, Atlanta at New Orleans, 53.5 point total. It's a pick'em, more or less. It's moving towards a pick'em. It's 26-28. New Orleans favored by 2, but some places had it as a pick'em. Excuse me, opened as a pick'em. I have to like the New Orleans offensive side of this. You know, it's hard to tell, but I also like, I mean, the running backs in Atlanta should benefit right now. I mean, we have seen on a pretty regular basis the New Orleans rush defense struggle. Now, of course, with Marshawn Lattimore back, they're going to be much better off. Carolina hasn't been able to run the ball all year long, but Cam picked up 51 rushing yards against them. Atlanta, different story. They're a team that absolutely can run the ball. They've had a couple tough running mashups. They had Carolina. That was a tough one. They had Tampa Bay. They smashed. They did very well. That was a productive run matchup. It was supposed to be. They did what they were supposed to do there. And now they get New Orleans, who's yielding over 4 yards per carry. We saw some AJ Perine break out against them. We've seen some good running back performances against New Orleans. So I do like all the running backs, more or less. I really do. I think you should definitely look at Alvin Kamara and Mark Ingram. I mean, these guys are just an unstoppable force. It's unbelievable. Alvin Kamara is having one of the greatest fantasy seasons that we will ever see. It is going to be something that we chase forever. Who's next year's Alvin Kamara? There's not going to be another Alvin Kamara, guys. Alvin Kamara is unbelievable. Watching him play is unreal. I don't know how to describe it. He has unbelievable power, balance, quickness. Everybody else is moving in, you know, at full speed, but in slow motion compared to what he's thinking about how he's going to, you know, dodge a tackle or just create full steam ahead. It's unbelievable how strong and balanced this guy is. He hasn't scored less than 23 fantasy points in 5 weeks. So if you want to play the slate, you better not fade him. Good luck. Don't. There's no reason to. The guy is too dynamic. He's too dangerous. 20-yard touchdowns last week. He only had like 11 touches and he scored twice. And he did the same thing in the Rams game. 14 touches, he scored 2 touchdowns. So Ingram up and down a little bit, but very, very successful in that last game, you know, 100 yards. He gets more touches. You know, the snap share is close to 50-50, in fact, but he actually out-touched Kamara 20-14 in positive game script last week. And that's kind of been the story. If he gets positive game script, they, you know, Kamara, I think, gives them a couple more looks, a couple things that Breeze can check into a little bit more comfortably. You know, and Ingram actually got the targets last week as well. So they're really kind of saying, listen, you guys are very similar backs. You can do the same things. We are dangerous with both of you out there. You know, the identity of this team doesn't have to be pass first, run first when one of you is out there or not out there. But I think Ingram is as the veteran, they say, listen, if we want you to kill the clock, we want you to drain between the tackles, we're going to go to you. We trust you. You've gotten through this situation before. So that is the case. So if you like New Orleans at home here to take a lead and hold it, I think that that's where you go. You're probably going to see the return of Brian Poole. And my guess would be you're going to see the return of Brian Poole and Desmond Trufant. Now, was it strategic by Dan Quinn to say, let's go ahead and sit them out here to make sure that they get rested up for a divisional game with New Orleans? Could be, because, you know, the reality is that Atlanta, their playoff hopes could be attached to how well they play New Orleans. And I believe they have New Orleans twice in the next, the Falcons twice, or excuse me, Falcons Saints happens twice in these last month of the season, if I'm correct. They have 1, 2, 3, they have 4 divisional matchups coming up. So, you know, and they just got edged back out of this by the Seahawks. They just got edged back out of the playoffs picture by the Seahawks, I believe, who, after their win against Philadelphia, jumped back up into the NFC spot. You know, that last, I'm trying to pull up the seating here. But I think that what they're probably trying to concentrate on is actually winning the division. You know, I think they should have won that Carolina game. I think that they think they can win that Carolina game. They're 7-5. You know, the Bucs are not a threat. They have they have one win against the Bucs. They could get another win against the Buccaneers. That's for sure. You know, they need to beat the Panthers, then they need to beat the Saints. And they could, I think, take an advantage in that division if they have a winning record against the Saints. And they would have the best division, or excuse me, the best divisional record in the NFC South, and they may be able to edge out the Panthers in that respect. So we'll see. It's interesting. It would have been, I think they really wish they had gotten that win against Carolina a couple weeks ago. That would have been a real, real big one for them. They needed that. But anyway, all right, that's enough about Atlanta's playoff situation. New Orleans, and why do I care? Because, well, I'm in the Atlanta market, and my wife's a big Matt Ryan fan, so we like watching the Falcons. So I know a lot about what's going on with the Falcons. you know, the question that you have to ask yourself here, I think, is Freeman is not getting workhorse volume. He's basically been getting 12 touches in the last month, in the last 6 weeks, more, you know, not really 20-touch guy anymore. He went 50-50 on carries with Tevin Coleman. I think that was kind of a reward for Coleman being so effective in relief of Freeman, and they're saying, you know, let's down the stretch, let's give these guys equal workload, and they've been very effective. Great offensive line, very effective in both schemes, you know, passing and catching. So I think they're going to continue that. And you have a very similar situation to Kamara and Ingram as you do with, you know, Freeman and Coleman. And I think that's a good thing, good problem to have for Atlanta. It's a bad problem for us as fantasy owners. You know, if I had to pick one, though, I'm probably going to go to Freeman. I like Freeman's ability to run between the tackles in a positive, possibly don't necessarily see him coming off the game. You know, I think the early goal line work could belong to him just because, you know, he's healthy. He's excellent between the tackles. He looked good, shifty in space as he normally does. You know, the one question that I have is, I guess, the wide receivers. If Julio, if there's one guy who could teach Marshawn Lattimore a little bit of a lesson about what life in the NFC South is like, it's probably Julio Jones. And I don't care how, you know, I mean, the guy has been phenomenal. This is Julio Jones. He is 6'4", he's over 200 pounds, and he runs a 4.3. There's not many people like him. In fact, I don't think that there's anyone like him. And so if this game gets really tight, you know, teams have been able to take away Julio. Xavier Rhodes did it last week. But I think it's as much Matt Ryan kind of not feeling comfortable forcing the ball as it is Julio. So we'll see if that target share goes back up. I don't know. You know, this offensive identity has shifted quite a bit. I think I'll stick to the running backs in this one, though, if I want to get exposure to that game. Moving on to the main slate, the first of the lowest totals. We know, guys, we're going low to high here. Chicago at Cincinnati. Two very, very bad teams right now. I mean, Cincinnati played admirably. Last night, that was a debacle, man. That was terrible. That was terrible. I was working, watching NBA, everything like that. But that game is the reason that, as we grow up, that game is the reason that we can't let our kids play football. You know, that game is the reason that we can't let our kids play football. Too scary. Too scary. Ryan Shazier, the juju hit, I don't care how clean you think it is. It is a dangerous play to blindside. To blindside a guy like that up at head and neck level, you know, and who cares if Fontez Perfect was the dirty player first? You don't want to see that happen to anybody. You don't want to see that happen to anybody, for their own health and safety. I mean, those guys are still somebody's son. And at the end of the day, if their mama has to, you know, meet them in the hospital and they can't walk anymore, then we don't really necessarily get to say that we think that this is a tough man's game. Like, that's not okay. We don't get to pretend like that's cool. Like, this is football, suck it up. No, you don't tell. That's not what you do. You feel sympathy, you feel empathy. You say, hey, let's be more careful. And they're trying to protect the game. I don't mind the league. And I think if the league says, you know what? Nope, guys, we can't have this. This is not, we know too much about head injuries. We can't have this type of football anymore. You got to change the way you play. We're sorry if that doesn't fit your agenda, but this is the way we want our game to be changed. And that's what they say. And they hold those suspensions up and they say that those are suspensions that are going to stand. And I stand by that. I think that's the right call. You got to make sure people are safe, you know, and it's not a safe game to begin with, but you got to do your best, right? You got to at least try. Had enough about my soapbox, kicking that out from under me. Back onto my podcaster's mic here. The Bears' offense is bad. There's some analysis for you, huh? Howard losing touches, losing snaps, hasn't gone above 15 touches in a while recently, hasn't gone above 50% snap rate in a while. Trubisky went back to, like, very, very low throwing volume against San Francisco, super low pace, not running a lot of plays. Cincinnati, you know, did they look good? Yeah, they looked good. I mean, AJ Green specifically looked very good in the first half. Of course, then they take him away and they completely collapse and Le'Veon Bell goes ham. You know, the second half Steelers are a thing. You know, Mixon though, without with the concussion, I think that's interesting. Gio will probably get the work. We'll see if he'll, you know, if he gets out of concussion protocol. I don't know, but if you have to leave the game in the second quarter, it's usually a bad sign. wouldn't be the worst thing in the world if he sat out. He was very solid in Pittsburgh, you know, over 5 yards per carry, and he did the rushing thing. Here's the pass catching thing. The thing about Chicago is they've been phenomenal against pass catching backs in the last month. I mean, only 26 yards per game receiving to running backs. Now, have they faced a lot of good pass catching backs? Not really. I mean, Carlos Hyde was supposed to do it, but Jimmy Garoppolo can actually throw to the wide receivers. So that's what you saw. I mean, you saw San Francisco say, well, we're going to run pass plays. And Jimmy Garoppolo said, okay, well, I can throw it to wide receivers, unlike Beathard, who is checking down constantly, you know. Do you like Gio? Yeah, I love Gio's game. You're going to get a massive discount on a guy who we know is, you know, a dynamic, explosive guy who can always break one off. I think he's an interesting possible play, but I don't think you're going to force him into your lineups against a Bears defense that's top 10 in adjusted fantasy points allowed. And part of that is just not that they're necessarily a phenomenally good defense, but that they are so slow and that this game is so boring and that they don't put any pressure on offenses that they often lead to, I think, lower scoring affairs that aren't fantasy friendly. And that's why we have this game as the lowest total. Here's my question. Can you play the Cincinnati defense against Trubisky? Hasn't really been turning the ball over, hasn't been taking a lot of risks, but Bears offense is so bad. and Cincinnati does have, you know, a good sack rate, but not a great turnover rate. I think that's the interesting thing. The one guy I am going to play is AJ Green. If you look at the data on how wide receiver ones have fared against this team, it is undeniable that this secondary is not bad, but on the islands, on the corners, in isolation, there you can take advantage of them. Marvin Jones, Devontae Adams, Marquise Goodwin, back-to-back-to-back weeks where they put up numbers. Marquise Goodwin went 9 for 9. Guys, 9 for 9. Every target was a catch. Devontae Adams, over 100 yards, touchdown. Marvin Jones, nearly 100 yards and a touchdown. I have zero issue going to AJ Green in this spot. I like him quite a bit with not a lot of, I think, elite wide receivers on the main slate. I think AJ Green is someone that you feel comfortable spending up for, given his market share, his ability to outplay matchups, that kind of thing. Detroit at Tampa Bay, no line in this one. We're not going to get a line. My guess is it'll be in the low 40s, 42, 43, somewhere in there. But we don't have a line, and we don't have a line because of the Matt Stafford hand injury. He got stepped on at the end of that Baltimore game. He's clearly dealing with some injuries. There was no fracture there, but he had a lot of nerve pain. He had a lot of soreness. You get stepped on by a 300-pound cleat, and you're not exactly loving squeezing a football. So we will see if he plays. I think that this game is very lopsided towards Detroit if we get Stafford. Now, the thing that I really like is that Detroit's defense has been playing so poorly that actually, according, I was over here looking at the data report or Vegas data report on Fantasy Labs, great tool. In fact, that Detroit has been involved in the second most games that have gone over. 51 total points in games that feature the Lions. Why? Because their offense is good enough to put up points, and their defense is bad enough to yield a lot of points. It's a perfect fantasy combination. And against a bad Tampa Bay passing defense, you have to think that that's exactly the case. The one trend that I'm watching is the Bucs running game. There's clearly not a lot of trust in Jameis. I don't think there should be a lot of trust in Jameis coming back from a shoulder injury. Offensive line just lost two starters. They clearly are struggling to protect him. He struggled to complete passes to the wide receivers, letting plays develop, stuff like that. You know, he was checking down a lot to Barber. He was checking to his tight ends, things like that. They want to run the ball, and this is what they did last year. Is eventually, when they didn't really know what to do with themselves, they just ran the ball. And they just, you know, they went back to that identity. They stopped trying to be a high-flying offense. We saw Mike Evans' fantasy value go through the floor. We saw the running backs get the ball. And listen, Peyton Barber did a damn good job. That Green Bay rushing defense has been stingy. They have been a stingy rush defense, and Peyton Barber was one of the first ones that really took advantage of them. I mean, obviously Le'Veon Bell got a good run in on them, but Peyton Barber, for being a second-string running back, put up numbers. So definitely looking at him as a possible value back, and the Detroit run defense is one of the worst out there lately. Absolutely terrible. Alex Collins looked phenomenal against them. You know, I think the Bucs passing defense, Stafford is the kind of guy that I think in this situation, if he plays and he says, I'm fine, I don't have a lot of pain, I'm not limited, I just have some bruising, they got the swelling out of there, whatever the case may be, he feels comfortable, he's throwing normally, I think he would destroy this passing defense. He's too comfortable in the pocket. He's got too many weapons. Marvin Jones is healthy. Golden Tate is healthy. Galladay is healthy. I mean, he was able to put up 23 points against, you know, against Minnesota, a feat that not a lot of quarterbacks have done. Jared Goff couldn't do it. You know, Matt Ryan couldn't do it with Julio Jones. He was one of those guys that can. I think he's aggressive enough and comfortable enough in his scheme that he would destroy this defense. So I love this spot for the Lions if he plays. I think one of the things that we have to question is who's playing running back for the Lions. The Bucs pass defense or rush defense has been bad. Now, it's been bad on the road specifically, but I really do think that's just kind of a symptom of the fact that they're losing guys. You know, their pass defense needs a lot of help. They're not able to get off the field. They're playing too many minutes, too many snaps, because they're allowing a high third down conversion rate. So you're going to get Ameer Abdullah back. He had a neck injury. That opened the door for Tyon Green, who got 11 carries, but he had 50 yards, but one of those carries was 30 yards. Okay, so then you had 10 for 20. And a touchdown. So let's not get fooled by the box score. He wasn't phenomenally efficient because none of the Detroit running backs have been phenomenally efficient. Theo Riddick, fine. He's the pass-catching back. Tampa Bay is not really a team you hammer with the pass-catching backs. But I think this is an interesting spot for all Detroit players. I think Barber is certainly someone that I'm going to look at as long as Martin is out. And if Stafford plays and that whole Detroit passing game becomes very interesting to me, I think you do, if you want to run it back, I think you do. I think that we're going to see DeSean Jackson get Darius Slay, maybe. You know, we'll look at it during the player breakdown, but I think you can run it back with Mike Evans. At home, Jameis should feel a little bit more comfortable. He has a game under his belt. You know, he's back. Maybe they figure out how to protect him a little bit better this time. He had plenty of attempts in that Green Bay game, just not productive. And after big disappointment week for Mike Evans, you could script it to the point that I think this is a good week to run it back with Tampa Bay. Indianapolis at Buffalo. Ugh, this is a bad one. No total here. We were waiting on information about Tyrod, but he is likely out. He avoided ligament damage. But he has some a bruise on his patellar tendon. Sounds not fun. And honestly, I think that Indianapolis now has the matchup advantage. Really, I mean, you know, Jacoby Brissett has been not that good, but he's limited the mistakes. They didn't take quite as many sacks last week. They're running the ball a little bit more. You know, they ran the ball almost 30 times last week against Jacksonville. And you know, they weren't going to win that game, but they were kind of in it for a little while. I think the Indy run game is in a good spot here. I think, you know, Frank Gore is kind of in a record hunting mode right now. I don't know if you guys saw that. I believe he's like on the leaderboard, moving up the leaderboard for all time rushing. And he's been seeing like 18 plus carries. And I think that they're trying to run the ball here and they have a great opportunity to do it again here against Buffalo. This run defense has been terrible, you know, over almost 200 yards allowed on the ground to the Patriots last week. The Indianapolis defense, though, on the opposite side, this is an interesting trend. They've been much more stingy. We saw it against Fournette. We kept going after them. You kept saying this Indy defense is bad. This Indy defense is bad. Well, nope. Mixon didn't do it. Bell didn't do it. Fournette didn't do it. If those guys didn't do it, I'm really, really skeptical about Shady McCoy. I mean, he's been fine up and down in efficiency, but this team is not scoring. You're going to have Peterman under center. What reasonable expectation for how much scoring they can do with Peterman, who threw 5 interceptions, mind you, is there? I mean, unless you're bullish on Peterman and his ability against this Indy pass defense, I don't think you have to invest in a high-priced running back like Shady McCoy unless you expect him to break one off, especially against a defense that's capable of stopping someone like Leonard Fournette. They have been better. They're not allowing nearly as many yards per carry, not as many yards per game. They're not a great defense, but if you can't throw the ball against a defense, again, you're not going to have a lot of success, you know, and I just don't trust this passing game to be good enough to support the offense. That's kind of what I'm saying, right? On the opposite side, T.Y. Hilton, no Tre'Davious White. I mean, guy is out with a concussion because of that ridiculous play by Gronk. Just an absolute, you know, bully of a play. I mean, we know that guy's not smart, but come on, man. Like, come on. This is when you need your high school football coach to grab you by the face mask and tell you to sit the fuck down. What's your problem? Like, that's why, where was Gronk's high school football coach, you know, to take the flag, rub it in his face and go, what is your problem? What is your problem exactly? Nothing, sir. I'm sorry. That's what Gronk needed at that moment. Belichick's not going to do it. It's a grown man. He's a big guy, but that's what he needed. Anyway, Tre'Davious White, man, he has been phenomenal. I didn't realize this. He's top five in PFF grade, 90.5 rating, phenomenally. So I think you could buy low on T.Y. Hilton in tournaments here. E.J. Gaines has been very good. He's been top 20, no doubt about it. In fact, he is top 20 in PFF. So he'll be good, but I think that, you know, T.Y. Hilton on turf, you know, we saw him even against Jacksonville get free. And Jacoby Brissett, if he sees T.Y. running free, he knows how to get the ball to him. If there's one thing he's learned, it's like, if he's open, you better try to get it to him. You know, he's not that good. He can't make that many throws, but he's been able to create some big plays. So I think it's an interesting spot. It's not a cash game play, but I wouldn't be surprised if you saw T.Y. Hilton, you know, run in a 40-yarder again against the Bills. I think Gore is one interesting play if you want a super cheap, low upside running back. That is it. And you can really only play him on FanDuel because he's not going to catch anything. Seattle at Jacksonville. This is an interesting game to watch. 39-point total. Jacksonville favored by 3. Both of these defenses phenomenal in the pass. Well, Seattle's trending in the wrong direction. They're actually below 15 in AFPA to the quarterback and the wide receiver. Phenomenal in the run defense. Good God, Bobby Wagner is unbelievable. Unbelievable. I watched that game against the Eagles, and I was just like, this guy is the best linebacker in the NFL. He is everywhere. Jacksonville on the other side, we know that they are phenomenal pass defense. This is Russell Wilson's specialty to try to take advantage of pass defenses. You know, and he did to a certain degree against Philadelphia, a couple really nice plays. Only he is capable of finding guys who you didn't even really know were on the field to score touchdowns, a la J.D. McKissick. It's kind of a gross situation. Both sides of the ball take away the other side's strengths. You see what I mean? Jacksonville doesn't allow the passing, which is Wilson's strength right now. Phenomenal passer in this game, creating so much value in the pass game from a fantasy perspective. Jacksonville wants to run the ball, and Seattle's been a phenomenal rush defense. Stingy as hell. Super disciplined. So I don't know. I think Jacksonville still tries to squeeze the clock, take care of home field advantage here, keep Russ off the field. And the reality is this pass defense is no joke. And the Seattle offensive line, still not great, still forcing, you know, Russ into a lot of scramble situations. So I don't know how bullish I am on Russ, but I'm definitely not bullish on Bortles, who has had some kind of cupcakey matchups recently to try and, you know, get his passing numbers up. But, I mean, they struggled in Arizona. You know, they struggled. They weren't able to really run away with the Indianapolis game in a way that, you know, you felt like, you know, they never were really in question, but it wasn't necessarily like, oh man, what an offensive juggernaut, you know? So I don't really know that you can feel good about anyone here in cash. The only guy that I want to keep an eye on is Mike Davis. I mean, Mike Davis for Seattle. First decent running back they had all year. I mean, he went 20 touches here on 72% of snaps and 100-plus total yards from scrimmage. And, you know, between the passing work, I think he had 4 targets and 20 touches. So Mike Davis, certainly interesting. I think he's going to be the lead dog in this backfield, no doubt about it. Do you want to play him against Jacksonville? You know, I mean, what's the – I don't know. I don't know about that. So a tough matchup to read, really tough one to read. You may just want to watch that game and stay away from it from fantasy. But remember, Russ is the best fantasy quarterback in football, if not one of the best quarterbacks in football. The Jets versus the Broncos. This is a battle of the bad. There's some really bad games this week, guys. Indianapolis, Buffalo. Yeah, that's bad. I don't know. I mean, Denver has been yielding so much rush production, but you can't trust any of these running backs. The three-headed monster, McGuire, Powell, and Forte. Everybody gets about 10 touches a week, right? McCown has been phenomenal. Jay Cutler put up 35 points on these guys. So do you go back to Robbie Anderson here? But they're on the road for the first time in a while, the Jets are. Do you go back to Robbie Anderson, possibly try to exploit the Denver passing defense, or do they wake up, but Aqib Talib is back, and all of a sudden it's not quite the same? I have no good read on what to do with the Jets offense in this situation, except for maybe you see a bounce back for Austin Seferian Jenkins, who's been very, very quiet over the last couple weeks. And, you know, ASJ still, I think, getting a good amount of snaps, but just not quite getting the touchdown production, even though he's had a couple touchdowns yoinked from him. I think we would be paying a lot more attention to this guy if he had a couple of those touchdowns, you know, held on. I mean, only three targets against Kansas City, but a good linebacking core. And, you know, a total of 16 targets versus Carolina and Tampa Bay in those last two games. Now, he hasn't really turned them into massively productive outings, but, you know, you could see a situation in which he gets 6, 7, or 8 targets funneled towards him and racks up 60 yards, and maybe he gets sneaks in for a touchdown, as he's gotten a couple of those, like I said, taken away over the last couple weeks. So ASJ, very interesting, kind of under the radar, bounce back type play. But, you know, I mean, everything is there. The snap rate is above 60%, you know, above 80% in certain situations. There's a lot to like. I think that there's a lot to like. McCown knows how to find him. And the Denver offense is just unusable. It truly is. It's unusable. Miami was the highest scoring defense in the league. I mean, I think you go to the Jets defense. No doubt about it. I mean, if the Miami defense is capable of doing that, the Jets defense has to be. I mean, the Miami defense is until last week, one of the worst in the league. And I know the Jets... I know the Jets are not good, guys, but, like, they at least know how to stop the run. I mean, they're not very good against the wide receiver, but there's no Tyreek Hill out here. I mean, Miami's defense just as bad against the wide receiver. They jumped up in the rankings a little bit last week, but going into that game, that was one of the worst defenses in the league. I mean, I talked about it on the show. So this is an ugly one. I don't know how much I want. I don't know how much I want in this game. Dallas versus the Giants, 41-point total here. Dallas, 6-point favorites coming off the long week on the road here. The matchup advantage certainly lies with the Cowboys' rush game specifically. We've seen New York Giants' defense limit the point scoring. They're not as bad lately. They have been, you know, after 2 weeks giving up 30-plus points to the Rams and to the Rams, and who else did they give up all those points to? They've been slightly better. They're not as bad. They're going to get Eli back. Spagnuolo's going to be the interim coach. I wouldn't be surprised if you see a solid Giants team effort here. I wouldn't be surprised if you see the post-McAdoo do it, you know, one for the Gipper, one for Eli. You know, everybody stands up when Eli takes his first snap as a Giant fuck you to McAdoo, you know, in their number 10 jerseys, and everybody on the defense is saying, you know, let's beat the Cowboys at home. What better week is there for them to come out and focus and take the energy that Spags is going to bring to the defense and really try to put a hurt on a Cowboys team that they don't like? Why not? I mean, this just feels like a letdown spot. I just want to say, so the paper tells us that the Cowboys' rush game has been phenomenal. It's actually interesting. Alfred Morris has been more efficient on a yards per carry basis than Zeke was, which is great. I mean, it says a lot about the quality of the scheme and the offensive line, and that Alfred Morris clearly still has it. And it makes a lot of sense. You know, he has been kind of on the shelf, but a very productive back before that. 27 touches for him in that last week, and then in a nice long 10-day week of rest. You're going to go in to a Giants team that has been giving up plenty of yardage. We saw a big game from Marshawn Lynch before he got dinged up. We saw a nice, you know, a complete bust from Kareem Hunt, but a nice game from Samaje Perine on the Thanksgiving game. You know, he had a tough first half and then bounced back and had almost 100 yards just in the second half alone. So you like the idea that the Cowboys are going to hammer the run. What you don't like is the possibility that you're going to get a renewed defensive effort from the Giants. That worries me. That it honestly does. They didn't roll over and quit in that Raiders game. They just couldn't quite help themselves with the turnovers and the, you know, and they couldn't score. They couldn't extend drives. And Geno looked fine, you know, but like not good. So they didn't roll over in that game, but they weren't really facing a very good Raiders team. It's not a very good team right now. So my thought here is actually you could go back to Evan Engram and Sterling Shepard. I think it's interesting. I think that, you know, the Cowboys have actually been yielding a ton of fantasy production to the wide receiver. And we've seen them actually give it up to, you know, they didn't give it up to the, to the Redskins on Thursday night. But Perine was going pretty good before he got knocked out. And you take away the running game, they force him into a throw, total change of strategy at halftime. So I think that you could definitely look at some of the some of these guys from the Giants passing game and entrust that Eli's going to be able to get the ball to Shepard and Engram as they're both finally healthy. Green Bay versus Cleveland, 41 point total here. Green Bay favored by 6. I think you have to like the Green Bay running game. They showed up last week, very effective. Jamal Williams in 2 weeks back to back. You know, they clearly have this kid in a place where they like him. Aaron Jones came and played. Of course, he had the 20-yard touchdown, but don't be fooled. He wasn't out there in regulation very often. He's still nursing that knee injury. I think we're going to probably see more Jamal Williams unless there's a report of some kind. Ty Montgomery on IR. Cleveland still yielding about 4 yards per carry on the ground. I think that's part of the way you want to attack this team, but you do want to attack them through the air. The problem is that Hundley threw the ball under 20 times on Sunday against a very bad Tampa Bay pass defense, and if you have the opportunity to protect a young quarterback from his mistakes and you're not a negative game script, clearly McCarthy said, let's limit the mistakes, let's slow this thing down, let's give it to the running back, and let's take those big chunk plays that Williams was able to get. It worked. It worked, you know. They kept the Bucs off the field, and they didn't actually expose their passing defense. It clearly is a kind of a shift in the way that they're playing to a much more boring strategy. But I don't necessarily see them a negative game script against Cleveland, even though Cleveland had Josh Gordon as in a 1 week sample size, he would be under a top 10 wide receiver right now in air yards and yards per reception, target share, full receiving yards. I mean, the guy literally looked like he had not missed didn't even miss a week with injury. He looked so comfortable running across the middle of the field, and Kaiser finally has a guy who's able to get loose over the middle of the field. Loved throwing the ball to him. I think that there's certainly a lot to like about Josh Gordon this week as a possible wide receiver one candidate. The issue that I have is if we saw them shut down Mike Evans, and that's no joke, and DeSean Jackson, is the Packers pass defense changing the way that they approach things? Are they using a different scheme to try and protect themselves on the backside so that they don't yield as many passing yards and as many big plays? It would make sense after what Antonio Brown did to them that they said, let's just slow the game down. We'll let teams run on us a little bit. We'll try to play it a little bit more safe. We'll drop a few more guys in coverage. We won't run as many crazy blitz schemes. And leave our corners on islands. Let's play a little bit more conservative. I think that's what you saw them do. Why else would, you know, Mike Evans only have 3 targets? Because he's getting bracketed. You learned a lesson from what Antonio Brown did to you. You bracket the number one wide receiver. They could do that to Josh Gordon here, try to slow things down. So I think it's an interesting week too, to go to a guy, like a Duke Johnson. As strange as this sounds, the Packers are, you know, yielding almost 10 yards per reception in the last two games. Could be a GPP type play that you know, you roll out there, especially on DK, where you get rewarded for those Duke Johnson receptions. I'm not really sure. But I think you're going to primarily concentrate your efforts here in this game on Josh Gordon, Jamal Williams news, hoping that Aaron Jones continues to take a backseat to Jamal Williams in this situation, and you go from there. Minnesota at Carolina, 42-point total here. This is a pick 'em. Minnesota, though, phenomenal on defense. Fewest touchdowns allowed in the league. The third-best defense in the league. Listen, I'm not messing with this Minnesota defense because I was saying this. Cam has been a good fantasy quarterback. His numbers do not reveal that he's necessarily been an excellent real-life quarterback. I know that I'm kind of on an island in that. I just don't really particularly think he's a very efficient quarterback, and I just struggle to really appreciate that he, you know, is a running back and a quarterback. It's not that I just don't necessarily think he's that good. Carolina hater, self-proclaimed. So take that for what it's worth. You can fast forward through that. I understand if you have different takes, but none of their passing metrics ranks higher than 22nd in the league. Most of them are 25th or 26th. Yards per reception, yards per game, completion rate, all of that stuff. He's not been efficient, but he had, you know, 51 rushing yards last week and two touchdowns. Now, the Devin Funchess touchdown kind of came in garbage time, no doubt about it, and it was a broken play. Ken Crawley tried to jump a route, and he missed it. And Funchess, you know, went up straight up to an apex catch where, you know, he's 6 foot six or whatever he is, and, you know, Ken Crawley tries to break on a route. He's too short. He missed the ball, and Funchess was, you know, straight up alone on the sideline. Broken play, not a fluke play, but good play, but necessarily, you know, a well-constructed drive from Newton. I don't think he's going to do as well against Minnesota here. Xavier Rhodes has been excellent. This pass rush has been excellent. They have the lowest third down conversion rate in the league allowed. My question is can we go back to the Vikings wide receivers? And the answer, I think, is yes. Michael Thomas did very well against this team. Why? The Carolina pass defense has not been very good. They are yielding over almost 300 pass yards in the last three games to the quarterback. Now, I know that that's not necessarily a counting stat that we look at to say, well, that's definitely going to lead to fantasy production. Well, okay, sorry. 263 passing yards on average in the last three games. However, you have seen them yield 300 passing yard performances to guys like Josh McCown, okay? And I'm not kidding. I mean, Josh McCown, 307 yards on 19 completions. Drew Brees, 269 yards. Jay Cutler had, well, he had 213 and two touchdowns. But while they are capable of limiting the completion rate to 60%, they've been yielding some bigger performances to wide receivers. And I don't think that their passing defense is 100% right now. I think you bring them into a situation where you have two elite wide receivers that they have to account for in Steph Diggs and Adam Thielen. I know I've been bullish on the Minnesota wide receivers. I think I like him here, but I understand if you say, in general, Carolina is a relatively efficient defense. I'm not going to necessarily do that. That's what happened last week. It wasn't that the Minnesota wasn't necessarily in a good spot. Atlanta's a relatively efficient defense. They're going to limit how many opportunities you have. Carolina should be the same. They're very good against the run as opposed to Atlanta, not as good against the run. So I would understand if you think this game is going to go under. If you do, then I think you avoid it completely. But if you want to take a chance on some Minnesota wide receivers, I think that is where you go with this one. San Francisco at Houston, 43-point total. Houston favored by 5. This is a gross game. This is another matchup of the bad. Let's put this one in the same bucket as Indianapolis and Buffalo. In fact, why don't you just build a lineup with San Francisco, Houston, Indy, Buffalo, and Tennessee, Arizona, and call it a day. The ugliest games in ugliest games, not worth watching at all. This is really kind of gross. The one thing that I think is trending in the right direction, it may be just me, I think Tom Savage is getting better. Okay? Now, he's terrible. Let's not get it twisted. But he threw the ball for over 300 yards on Sunday. He threw the ball 49 times. He's completed the highest number of passes he did in 4 weeks. He had the most fantasy points. And that was the best matchup that he's had so far. Now he gets San Francisco. Far worse than Tennessee in adjusted fantasy points allowed, just because this team allows so many more points. Now, Garoppolo on the opposite side should help this team. And in general, it's going to help the offense, which is going to help the defense. He was solid, 26 for 37, just under 300 yards, had an interception, but created some massively efficient performances from guys like Jimmy Smith, or excuse me, not Jimmy Smith, Marquise Goodwin, Taylor, what's his name? I forget his first name. But Marquise Goodwin went for 8 for 8 for 99 yards. Wow. That's really interesting to me. And again, evidence that the Bears' pass defense not as good as some of the advanced metrics show us. We've seen good individual performances from good wide receivers, vertical wide receivers. So I think A.J. Green in play. But Houston is a terrible pass defense. So could you go back to Marquise Goodwin? Yeah, I mean, I think you're going to have to throw the ball. They're going to want to throw the ball. They want to feature Garoppolo. They want to put him in passing sets. They want to see what he has capable of doing. If they invest in wide receivers next year, they want him to feel comfortable in the scheme. You know, so you're going to see them run passing sets here. He threw the ball, 37 times on Sunday, even in a low-scoring game against the Bears. So I like this spot for him against a bad Houston defense. I think he's can only get more comfortable. And the Houston's rush defense trending in the wrong direction right now. Over 5 yards per carry in the last month against some decent running backs. Now, Matt Breida and Carlos Hyde split touches 20-12 here last week. Hyde had 20, Matt Breida with 12 touches. That's 32 total touches for the offense, which actually says a lot about Garoppolo, because it's his ability to actually extend drives and create more plays. They haven't really been able to support that many touches for a running back. Why? Because they haven't been able to create that many first downs. I mean, all of a sudden you have a situation where you have guy getting first downs and you're on the field more. I mean, just more plays in general. You know, they ran 75 plays against Chicago, which was, you know, a high for the last 4 or 5 games. Not necessarily that much higher than some of their other games, but definitely a little bit better. And, you know, you support 30 total touches for Carlos Hyde. That's pretty solid. Now, he had Seattle, he had Chicago, both of those teams, solid rush defenses, at least schematically. That's one thing Chicago tries to do, is take away the run. Houston trending in the wrong direction, like I said, and definitely a bad pass defense. So I think this game could be kind of a sneaky fantasy value. Of course, DeAndre Hopkins is going to be a lock for me until I see him get less than 12 targets. He had a touchdown. He missed the touchdown by 1.5 inches last week. I love DeAndre Hopkins in this spot on a slate where there's not a lot of security in wide receiver. I like Hopkins and Green. I think that they are two guys that you can trust as elite types, that should be I consider them trustworthy. Marquise Goodwin is interesting. I think you have to make up your own mind about Hyde. I don't know. I don't know if I can go there. Tennessee at Arizona, 44-point total. Tennessee favored by 2. Tennessee should have the matchup advantage, right? I mean, this is the better team, right? I don't know. This is exactly how Arizona sets up their defense. They want to stop the run. They want to stop good wide receivers, and they'll let you try to create outside of that. Right? So why do they do, what do they allow? They allow running back passing yards. They allow the wide receiver too. Well, great. Okay, DeMarco Murray isn't Todd Gurley. He's not running slants. He's not going to run slants. He's good in space. He's good on the swing, you know, on the swing pass, on the screen pass, things like that. Set up kind of, you know, design pass type runs. But they're not going to give the ball to Derrick Henry until the fucking fourth quarter. And he's not going to score unless he gets a 75-yard touchdown, because Malarkey is kind of an idiot. So it's kind of hard to say that Tennessee actually has the advantage here. If Rishard Matthews plays, then I think that that's a good sign. I think you're likely going to see Patrick Peterson shadow him, which should allow Corey Davis a little bit more space to work. He's actually been more efficient with Matthews out there, been able to get more targets. Delanie Walker continues to be the number one passing asset in this offense. Arizona's not great against the tight end. I think they're 20th in AFPA. That's not bad, but whatever. It's hard to feel comfortable with the Tennessee offense in this situation on the road, especially considering how few points they are comfortable scoring. Like, they're okay only scoring 17 points. Houston has been hemorrhaging production to teams, and they barely outscored them. I don't like this spot necessarily for Tennessee's side of the ball. I do like Larry Fitzgerald. Can't stop, won't stop. The man has been unbelievable. And you know what? They're finding him. They continue to find him in the end zone. He had 10 targets, I believe. Gabbert targeted him and continues to target him. He's finding him on more routes. He's finding him in the end zone. This is a great pass defense to attack with a good wide receiver one. So definitely interested in some Larry Fitzgerald in this situation. If you can score on the Rams, you can definitely score on the Titans. The question is can you invest too heavily in two boring offenses that are perfectly comfortable just kind of trading punts for a while? You know, can you do that? I think that Larry is about all I will do, and that's partially because he's relatively inexpensive. And I know how talented and consistent he is, and if there's one high-quality wide receiver in this game that you trust to get volume and production, it's him. I mean, there's just no question about it. Of course, $7,600 isn't a perfect price, but it's really not a bad price for him either. The nice thing about there's a lot of cheap assets in that game. $6,000 basically for every asset on the Titans, because that's about what they're worth. You have no idea who's going to score. Washington at the Chargers. This is a really fun game, guys. 46-point total. The Chargers are favored by 6. They are rolling. They could not score a touchdown to save their life. 4 red zone trips last week in the first half. Could not get in the end zone. Missed a field goal and then knocked 3 through. Rivers, though, absolutely destroying. Had 400 yards in the Thanksgiving game. Almost had 400 yards in that last game last week. Did not have 400 yards, but was getting there. Was well on his way. 75%, almost over 70% completion rate. He has just been phenomenal, in his accuracy of late. So you have to like this situation against another Washington defense, Washington team in general, who just is so, so banged up. So we can continue to look at the high-priced fantasy assets in this offense, Keenan Allen, Melvin Gordon, Hunter Henry. Now, on the opposite side of the ball, Samaje Perine in the concussion protocol, very solid, though, so far. Over 4 yards per carry. If he's back, he's interesting. Running backs against this team can be efficient. Against, especially if you have a decent quarterback behind them. I mean, Alf wasn't exactly, but remember, the Chargers, we saw them, that pass rush just absolutely annihilate them. And I think that Alf could have been more productive if that offense in general hadn't made so many mistakes. The problem that I have with Washington right now is the offensive line injuries. I mean, everybody is injured on that offensive line. Morgan Moses now out. TJ Long at center out. Brandon Sheriff has been out for a while. I just don't know how productive you can be with offensive line that injured coming out of the concussion protocol on the road. You know, against a defense, it's not really going to allow you to throw the ball very effectively. So that worries me. On the Chargers side, let's go through these assets here. Gordon, he's just a tilt fest, but the volume is there, over 20 touches in the last couple weeks. Increased snap rate against Cleveland. That was really nice, you know. Even in a little bit of a positive game script, we saw him get the majority of snaps and touches. Washington's defense certainly trending in the wrong direction in a lot of different places on the field. So heavy home favorite, high total. He's set up for the exact same situation he was last week. Does he get in the end zone for you this week? Because if he did last week, you would have been really happy with him. But he didn't. It was like 12 fantasy points. Keenan Allen will not see Josh Norman. He does not shadow. He does not work out of the slot. He has been on fire all year. I think you can in the last month. I think you can fire him up. I don't really see. I overthought it with McCourty out of the slot. They move him around so much in so many different formations that he's still his favorite red zone asset. He had 5 red zone targets last week. He still is one of the leading targets in the NFL in the red zone for wide receivers. So I think Keenan Allen very much in play, and Hunter Henry very much in play. We've been targeting tight ends against the Redskins all year long, have no problem going back to Hunter Henry at a very, very, reasonable $5,600 price tag. I think that's a good spot. Now, he did leave the game with a knee injury. It was just kind of an awkward hit, kind of like a helmet to the knee type thing. But you got to think that he can get some treatment this week, stay off of it, get plenty of good rest, and he'll probably play. P. Ryan is a question. I don't know. He's been phenomenal in his workload and his, if he plays, you have to think that he gets 20 plus touches. And Cousins should be able to, at least keep this offense competent. That's kind of been what he did, except for in that Dallas game. But they get a little bit of a comeback later. That's kind of what Cousins does. He doesn't let you ever stay out of it. I don't know. I'll wait and see what the practice reports tell us about P. Ryan. If he plays, he's interesting, and I think this game becomes more competitive because of that. Oakland at Kansas City, 47-point total here. Kansas City -4. This game is bothering me. I'm going to be very clear about this. Kansas City had looked so bad. They still look so bad. They have a lot of issues on both sides of the ball, but they come out and their offense just absolutely explodes. Why? Well, they got the vertical scheme going again. Massive deep plays to Tyreek Hill, deep plays to Travis Kelce, letting Alex Smith air it out, lowering the Jets' defense into single coverage. They just took advantage of it. And Alex Smith has been one of the best passers in deep ball passer rating that there has been all year long. He threw 3 deep touchdowns. He added massive rushing numbers. I just don't necessarily know if that's sustainable or if that's a fluky thing. I mean, we saw a little bit more of what we expected from Alex Smith in the middle of the year. We were saying this is actually the kind of Alex Smith that we normally expect. The numbers were pretty moderate to bad. Oakland, though, I mean, they have been a terrible defense. We saw, the Patriots manhandle them. Geno Smith looked decent against them. They scored touchdowns. I just don't necessarily believe in this defense whatsoever, and I think Kansas City has a reason to play well at home after getting beat by this Oakland team on Thursday Night Football a couple weeks ago. Oakland, though, on the opposite side, offensively, has been terrible. I mean, Carr is quarterback 22 in all fantasy, 0.43 points per dropback. That's Jacoby Brissett. I mean, guys, that's where he is. That's his company down there in the 23 range. That's Jacoby Brissett. He's not been very good. He's been pretty mediocre, pretty low completion rate in the last 3 games, missing on over a third of his attempts, completion rate floating in the low 60% range. And they've played some bad defenses. I mean, the Giants, the Pats are bend but don't break. You love what he did against Kansas City last time out here. The question is do you think that the Kansas City is going to let that happen again? Especially with the possibility that Amari Cooper, not 100%. Even though this pass defense is really, really bad. I think Crabtree is in an interesting bounce back spot here as he will return from suspension. Marshawn Lynch, a little bit banged up, but playing well. Although Kansas City's rush defense, not quite as bad as it was. There was a time when we were really targeting them, again with Zeke, with Le'Veon Bell, they seem to really, really be struggling. But they're up to 16th in the league, kind of schematically changed things. And if you think about Justin Houston returning, stuff like that, it makes sense that they would bounce back slightly in the rush game. But still, 32nd and 31st in AFPA to the quarterback and the wide receiver. So that's where we want to exploit this Kansas City team. Kareem Hunt, 12 touches, ouch. It's over. We can't go there even against a bad Oakland defense. I just don't trust it. And do you trust either quarterback? I think that if you go to anything here, it's probably pass catchers. Kelce is probably my 1. Crabtree is my 2 most trusted pass catcher. And then Tyreek Hill is my 3. I don't want to be overexposed to this game if it gets sloppy. But I do want some exposure to this game if it shoots out, because it could. So I think one of those guys, probably Kelce being my favorite of all of them. Just the most consistent, highest floor type performance. Although Crabtree in a good situation can be very nice. He just hasn't really done that. I mean, when was the last time we saw Michael Crabtree get, 10 targets and, the New England game, 11 targets. than the Buffalo game, 10 targets, but not catching a lot. 6 of 11, 5 of 10. That Kansas City game, he went 3 of 7. It says a lot about Derek Carr. You just watch Derek Carr recently, guys. He does not look good. He really doesn't. He really doesn't. He doesn't look comfortable. He's just not timing his routes right. It's not fun. Philadelphia at the Rams, 51-point pick'em. Love this game. Now, this is a game you're going to want to watch. Both of these teams, the two highest scoring offenses in the league, over 30 points per game, outscoring their Vegas implied totals on a regular basis. They're involved in the highest total games on the slate on a regular basis. But good defenses, defenses that are not yielding 20 points per game. Wentz almost had that game in Seattle that I was hoping for. I mean, he had some phenomenal throws, just absolutely electric. But defensively, Seattle, just stout. You know, that fumble on the goal line really, really changed the whole game for me. You're thinking about it. You have, on top of Wentz's 18-point performance, you had a 6-yard rushing touchdown. All of a sudden, you're at almost a tie game going into halftime. And Wentz, from a fantasy perspective, you know, you have a lot more production. Excuse me, not a lot more production, but more production from him, and that would have been really nice. He still could be the play here. I mean, he still is one of the best fantasy quarterbacks that's out there scoring consistently above 20 points. Last week was, you know, just below two turnovers and a missed touchdown opportunity on the goal line are really going to always change that for you. You know, the Rams have been tougher on passers than Seattle. That's no doubt. Their pass defense much better. They are top 10 in AFPA to the quarterback and the wide receiver. Seattle, not quite. They're in the teens, 15, 16, 17 range, I believe. But Philadelphia should be able to run the ball here against the Rams. Latavius Murray did it, but Mark Ingram didn't. That's the interesting thing to me. I mean, and we saw them, the Cardinals, not really be able to run the ball too much. Now, of course, that was Kerwin Williams, not Adrian Peterson, who was out with the neck injury, so it's hard to get a good read on what you get from this Rams rush defense. But they clearly made an effort to stop Mark Ingram in that situation, and they did. Can you trust any of the running backs in Philadelphia? The answer is no. None of them get enough touches. They all split passing work. Some of them get midfield work. Blunt gets the goal line work, but you know, it's, you can't trust any of those guys. What you can say is that perhaps their ability to run the ball will allow them to be more productive offensively than they were in the Seattle game. I think that you're going to have a much more reliable play action. You're going to have a much more reliable short down, you know, down and distance situations, perhaps. That's kind of my read on this game. So the pass, the passing game could benefit from that. So Wentz could be definitely in play in the highest total game of the main slate. Now, on the opposite side, Goff is interesting, but I got to say this, guys. Philly pass defense definitely improving. One of the lowest passer ratings in the NFL in the last month. Now, they've played some terrible opponents, don't get me wrong. You know, you get the Niners, the Broncos, and the Bears at home, your defense is going to look pretty freaking good. But then they played Dak, they played Russ, and Russ kind of torched them, but Russ torches everybody. Don't get your feelings hurt about that, Philadelphia. But the pass defense definitely improving, one of the lower passer ratings recently. You know, they think the return of Jalen Ramsey, certainly not Jalen Ramsey, excuse me, what's his name? Florida State, previously on the Bills, rolled his ankle. I don't know. Whatever. So do you go to Watkins and Kupp? No Woods. Do you go to Watkins and Kupp? You know they're going to have to throw the ball. They're still relatively well priced. I think what you look for here is probably Kupp over Watkins. But that's tough because, you know, Jalen Mills is, I believe, the slot cornerback there. I'm trying to remember who the slot corner is in Philadelphia. But we've understood what their scheme is. Allow the short stuff, limit the long stuff, okay? And so Watkins, for me, isn't as much of a play, but he has been establishing a much more clear rapport. You know, that touchdown came on a very interesting route. where he literally ran all the way across the field and used a ton of traffic over the middle to lose Patrick Peterson, which was a really just really good design. But that doesn't mean that he's not in play. I mean, that those are the kinds of plays that you're trying to get him involved. Ronald Darby, that's the guy. Ronald Darby on the outside will get Watkins lining up on the left. So you got to wonder, you know, if this game is a little bit more boring, if it's a little bit like Rams Seahawks, you know, where you have two decent defenses here that are just kind of taking advantage of each other, kicking each other around the field, or if this is the 230-40 point offenses that just go shootout mode. Can you play Todd Gurley? This is one of the best rush defenses in the league. They have not yielded a 100-yard game in a couple weeks. They have been phenomenal up front in the advanced metrics, but they're also, you know, very good as far as just AFPA. They're number one in adjusted fantasy points allowed to the running back. So that is that's a big deal. That's a big deal. Gurley against this rush defense is probably going to struggle. That's what you kind of worry about with this game. It's like, okay, well, no Robert Woods. Pass defense is improving, but we saw Russ. It's hard to get a good read on it, but I think you're going to want to try to find little corners to expose here. People will struggle to get exposure to it. I think you try to commit maybe to one of the quarterbacks is a good way to get exposure. It'd be an interesting way to do that. Sunday night game. Here we go. Primetime slate. Sunday night is Baltimore-Pittsburgh. Monday night, New England, Minnesota. Miami. Baltimore, Pittsburgh, 41-point total. Pittsburgh favored by 7. Gosh, I mean, I think we have to realize the fact that Pittsburgh at home in primetime is a absolute slam dunk. Now, interesting stat about Baltimore. In the last month, they've yielded quite a bit of receiving production in the passing game. And we saw, you know, listen, they're very good at taking the ball away. They're good at ball hawks. Jimmy Smith, however, out with an Achilles, it's going to totally change the face of this defense. I think you definitely look at a possible Pittsburgh onslaught as an interesting GPP option in the primetime slate. Antonio Brown likely going to play. Smith-Schuster will be out. We saw this already in one Sunday night game against Green Bay. We saw Antonio soak up the targets, especially at home. Of course, Le'Veon Bell definitely in play, as we know Baltimore's rush defense, good, not great, and allowing some pass catching as well. We saw him earlier in the year take advantage. You can't hold a good man down. They're either going to run the ball with him and give him the ball 20 times, or they're going to let him catch 10 passes. Did it last night. He's been phenomenal in the passing game, so I think Lev Bell certainly interesting play. Now, as far as the Pittsburgh defense, they have just kind of flip-flop. Their identity has been a tale of two halves. They come out, they get torched in the first half, they make some adjustments, and then they're different. It's what happened last night. It's what happened in the Green Bay game. I'm not really sure how to get a good read on it. And I don't really love the Baltimore offense. The other thing is Alex Collins seemed to be the guy that we wanted to get going, but he's been sidelined with migraines. We'll see if he's practicing this week. I'm not really sure if he is. It's kind of interesting possibly to go to Danny Woodhead if you're looking for in a large field tournament. He's been getting touches. He probably will be in negative game script getting more receiving work. I think he's in an interesting spot. But that's about all I would try to do on the Baltimore side, because it's just hard to project right now how they're going to run this offense. Do you want to invest in Mike Wallace? He's their lead wide receiver. Do you want to invest in Mike Wallace? Not really. You know? Not really. I don't really trust that. Monday night, New England versus Miami. I mean, just give me all the Pats. Honestly, just Pats and Steelers, man. Just Pats and Steelers. Just get them all in there. You know, we've seen, it's obvious that they, you know, no Gronk is going to be very interesting for this team. So what are you probably going to see? How are you going to replace Gronk? Well, Danny Amendola has been out there, but quiet. James White seemed to emerge for a couple extra targets last week. So I wouldn't be surprised if you see a little bump in targets for those two guys who kind of create some of the stuff across the middle, not the vertical wide receiving that, you know, Chris Hogan and Brandon Cooks are doing, although Hogan's still out with that shoulder injury. I think you definitely could see some more volume for Danny Amendola and and James White. Now, We've only seen Gronk miss one game, and that was the Tampa Bay game. But that game wasn't exactly a great kind of – it really was a hard read to get that game. Because remember, the Patriots scored like one of the lowest numbers that they had scored all year. They only scored 19 points. Tampa Bay didn't really score. They had all those missed field goals. Patriots defense was kind of in flux. But if you remember, Gronk was out that game. That was the other game where Gronk was out. He was a last-minute scratch. Here's how the targets broke out. You had five receptions for Cooks, 85 yards. Amendola, 8 for 77. Chris Hogan, 8 for 74. James White, 7 for 57. Okay? And I think that is telling to me. Okay? That is telling to me that Danny Amendola, even with Chris Hogan out there, started to get a little bit of work. They did not really use the tight end whatsoever in that situation. So I definitely think that you might see some more work for a guy like James White, Danny Amendola, in passing down situations. They may split those guys out, try to, you know, kind of fill in that role for Gronk as he will be out for the suspension. Rex Burkhead and Deion Lewis will continue to both get 15 touches. I can't buy a Deion Lewis touchdown in the last couple weeks. I can't get it. I can't get it right. I go Burkhead in the Raiders game. Nope. Lewis touchdown. I go back to Lewis twice in a row. I'm bullish on Lewis twice in a row. Great game. Phenomenal games in both situations. Nope. No touchdowns. Just yards. Just a ton of huge, efficient, amazing yards from one of the best offenses in the league from Deion Lewis. Just won't get into the end zone. And Burkhead, I don't know what it is, but he's got a nose for the end zone, and they're giving him touches inside the 20. So you have to look at Rex Burkhead again in this situation. I think it's a very interesting strategy to just own multiple Patriots running backs. Why not? Why wouldn't you? What's the worst situation? They both score one touchdown, or one scores two touchdowns. They both go for 200 yards. If you had two running backs who each went for 100 yards and a touchdown in your lineup, you would be very happy. That's kind of what they've both been doing recently. So I have no problem going to them. And I have no problem going to some of the Pats pass catchers here. Of course, Brady definitely in play. Now, if you want to run it back, fine. Be my guest. I guess the way to do it, though, is with Kenyon Drake. He is got massive, massive volume in that Sunday game and looked pretty efficient. I mean, the kid had 23 touches and he made his best out of him. And against the Denver defense, that was pretty stout up front, but lost a couple pieces in their defense. They're going to be they lost a couple pieces in that defense, but the Patriots have been allowing about 5 yards per touch. The problem is they don't allow you to score. They don't allow you to stay on the field on third down. So you have good bend but don't break philosophy where they don't allow guys to extend drives and get into the end zone. So Kenyon Drake, interesting, but I would almost prefer the Miami running backs hands down if you're playing that primetime slate. Hey, guys, tomorrow NBA podcast. So get ready for the NBA breakdown that we have coming up tomorrow. Of course, Thursday, NFL player breakdown. We go through the player pool for you guys. We'll be right back.